Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 19th, 2016. You're listening to the best, the longest running poker cast in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Bewildered Long.
Why are you bewildered, Scott?
Well, you're like, hey, you ready to start? I'm like, yep. And then, like, it's a long pause, and I'm like,
the record button.
You me or something?
The record button wasn't working.
Call 911?
Got to make sure it records, because we don't want to have another one of those Barry Greenstein moments.
Yes.
Where we recorded the best part of the show ever, and it wasn't recording, so. Not our fault, by the way. We're not going to throw anyone under the bus, but it wasn't me and you. But yeah, I hit the record button, and then the light wasn't going blinking. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not saying anything, so that thing's going.
All right, so let's start off with this. One more reason for us to dislike the daily fantasy sports industry.
Yes.
As it clings to whatever hope it can find to remain relevant in the United States. And actually, some of that hope is here in Florida. I mean, the bill to allow it here in Florida is like sailing through the legislature. It's really crazy.
Wow.
But nowhere else. Everybody else has got them shut down. But anyhow, Matt King, who's the chief financial officer of FanDuel, was recently interviewed on PBS Frontline. And when he was asked by the host whether poker's a game of skill, he emphatically said, no, Chris. And then went on to say, every time the deck is shuffled, chance trumps skill.
Wow. Isn't that nice of him?
Yes.
Desperate times call for desperate measures. Let's distance ourselves from the poker, which was deemed not very kindly by the DOJ, and say, we're not like those guys.
We're not criminals.
We're skillful people. We have skillful people playing our game. Yeah, I read that from beginning to end, and it was just clear that this guy's just trying to save his company. You know, to me, I think he one, it's ignorance. If he's not just saying that, you know, to save his company, if he truly believes it, then it's just how can you as someone who is a CFO of a company that you are clearly trying to dissect as being skillful by the academic portion of it that you're trying to, you know, put toward this, and then look at our game and say no. No, you're not doing any of those things in your game. It just seems like this guy's just trying to save his company, that he's not really that ignorant, but I don't know, maybe he is.
Well, it's kind of more in this trend of these companies trying to distance themselves from poker.
Yeah.
You know, they cut, I think, DraftKings, but I think it was also, maybe it was FanDuel, but one or both of them have cut all ties with poker to begin with, and really just trying to, you know, not be tainted at all by the great game that we enjoy.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, if the guy really does believe that, he's clueless. I don't believe he really believes that. I think it's just, you know, he sat there with his PR guy one day and said, hey, let's write up some BS and go out there and try to sell it to the people at PBS that don't know the difference.
Yeah.
It is just, you know, it's bad enough that we can't get judges or lay people to understand the skill in poker. But when you have people that really should know that, out there on a major show like this, polluting it, it's really difficult to accept, I think.
Every time a person pumps up a football, chance trumps skill. Every time a baseball player rubs a baseball before he pitches it, chance trumps skill. I mean, how ridiculous is that statement?
Yeah,
every time
like
the deck is shuffled.
Skill involved in driving a car. You know, you just get in the car and roll the dice. Maybe I'll get the Walgreens, maybe I won't.
Yeah.
Can't control those other guys on the road, so it's all chance.
All chance, buddy. You have no brakes. You don't have a steering wheel. You're just starting the car and hoping it gets you where you want it to go. I mean, really, it's just sad. And that's the more you think about it, the more you know this guy doesn't really think this. I mean, there's just no way a person who has a position that he has in this company and with this company, which is so similar to what we do with poker online, with tournaments and singos and the way you use your skill, to say that, you know, it's exactly like you said. He's just dissing himself from us because there is no way this guy could actually form that opinion. Achieving the position he had in life, he can't be that ignorant.
Nope.
But you know, it. Let me ask you. I forgot that I wanted to bring this up when you brought the Florida thing up. I always forget if federal says it's you can't do it. Can the state still do it?
Well, federal hasn't really said you can't.
Yeah. No, I'm saying if they do, I'm talking about an if-then circumstance later on.
I mean, it depends, I guess. I mean, there's certain things that federal government can override on. But,
okay.
For the most part, they don't get into that kind of stuff, especially the stuff they leave it to the states. So, it'll be interesting to see whether it actually does get all the way through the Florida legislature right now. I mean, I really thought it had no chance, but it's past committees and past votes. You know, eventually it's going to have to get signed by the governor. Of course, we're in the middle of this big Seminole Compact.
Yes.
The Seminole Tribe down here. That's really contentious, so that certainly would derail all of that. So that's where I think it's not going to make it, but really surprised it's made as far as it has down here. Especially every other day, there's another story that says, you know, some state has shut them down.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, and I don't know if I've brought this up on, I don't think I've brought it up on the show, but I may have talked to you about it in person. You remember Rich Belsky?
Yeah, that name sounds familiar.
He was like a poker guy, rep guy, and
right.
Back when we were back at the time still.
Oh, yeah.
Remember him? I think he did stuff a card player too. I can't remember specifically, but. He's moved on to bowling, and he's started this company called Rolltech, and it's an app that, at first blush, it appears to be just this app that you can keep track of your bowling scores and how you're doing and what pins you left standing that night, what trends you were doing, or whatever it is. But then further review, it's also a gambling site in the sense that you can put money on the site and pit yourself against other bowlers around the country that night.
Nice.
And then if you're bowling in a scratch division, it's like any other thing. Like, it's heads up. You know, like a heads up championship sign kind of thing. If you, in the first game, if I beat you, I win my $3 or whatever. And then the next game, I'm up against a bunch of people again. And you're not eliminated after the first game. You're going game by game, like pots. Like if you're bowling in a league and you put money in for a pot, if you have the high game, you win the pot. So this is very similar to something like that as well, except it's pure skill because you're bowling, especially in scratch matches where you can't cheat and you can't because you have to.
Hey, what happens if the guy in the next lane throws his ball on your lane?
Well, there's scenarios that take care of that.
There's no skill.
There's scenarios that take care of that. Every time you stand on the approach, chance trumps skill. But so anyway, Belsky owns this company, and they're sponsoring all kinds of. He's one of the owners, I guess, and they're sponsoring all kinds of stuff on the pro tours, and you see commercials during the bowling. And so a friend of mine who was big on FanDuel and whatever the other one was, DraftKings, and. I told him last year, I'm like, because he says, how is this different from poker? And that's when you and I start talking about, you said there was a fantasy carve-out. And I'm like, oh, and then I told him that, and then now we're getting all this crap. So I saw him again, and I'm like, you know, these fantasy guys are really trying to find their way through. And, like, New York had that problem with him. And I said, don't be surprised if you lose your money on these sites. So then he comes up to me that night with the Rolltech thing, and he's like, hey, what about this? And I'm like, you know, all I know is it's gambling. You know, I mean, it's skill based, but so is poker, and they frown on that. So I don't know what to think of this thing. What that's pure skill, Scott. There is no, hey, you know, I mean, yeah, there might be an easier shot at some. They call it a shot when the oil they put down, but you know, there might be an easier condition at one facility versus another one. So that guy's gonna have a better chance of winning that night, or he might be a better bowler. But it's pure skill as far as what you're doing with your equipment and whatever. Does that have a chance of surviving, or are they going to come after them too, you think?
I think eventually anything like that gets enough attention. That's what it needs attention, though.
Yeah, it needs attention, right.
Probably a lot of stuff like that that's going on that, you know, no one ever even pays attention to, that otherwise we'd probably get in trouble. But right.
Especially if you keep it on an app and you're not,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
you're on your phone at the bowling alley and you're doing it and you're not home and plugged in or something and you're using the Wi-Fi that's going through the air or whatever, you know. I mean, obviously they can still track that stuff, but I wondered if, because he asked me, I think it was last night or whatever, he's like, so what do you think about this? And I'm like, well, it's clearly skill-based when it comes to the scratch stuff. The handicap stuff, you can get guys who are bagging you and not bowling a big average and then bowl and they're kind of like angle shooting and cheating that way. But if you're bowling scratch, there's really, you're just hoping you're going against a guy who has a difficult condition that night or a bad night. But skill-wise, it's pure skill. There's no intangibles that are going to really make it chance. You know, you might get an unfortunate leave or something like that when you bowl, but I just wondered if that had a chance too, because it is gambling. But then yeah. again, as long as you're reporting your income, there's nothing wrong with it unless you're in a state that forbids it or whatever, or prohibits it. So, I don't know. I just thought that was interesting that now there's another thing that my buddy's getting into that I'm wondering if they're going to shut it down on him too. You know?
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, this other thing made me nauseous when I read it.
All right, well, it's another season of Survivor, and of course that means another pro poker player is a contestant.
It's like four now, right? Yeah, four or five.
Seems like more than that, but whatever.
Yeah.
This season, which debuted on Wednesday, features Anna Kate, I guess it is?
Yeah, I think it's Kate.
Who said she was a cocktail waitress at the Borgata in her application, but really makes her money at the poker table. And then Mob shows her having $10,415 in career tournament winnings, with the biggest score being $3,035. Finishing 110th in a Borgata tournament. Now, I know you watched the first episode. I haven't yet. I feel bad because, you know, I'm a big fan. But what are your impressions of latest representative of the poker world?
Well, she seems very bright. I think she's on the brains. It's such a blur. It's an hour and a half show, yeah. and you're trying to meet all these people and try to figure out who the names are and try to get used to it and see who your favorites are going to be, that kind of thing. But I'm pretty sure she's on I think she's on the brains, but she's a good-looking woman, so I'm not really sure now. And I remember reading this about her, too, that she had 10 grand in career winnings, and she's calling herself a pro poker player. And at first I was like, you're not that good of a pro. But then I thought, well, you and I never gauge. She could be a cash game player and be a pro.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so don't Hendon Mob and showing that means nothing to, like, I know a lot of these stories are on the Daily News or whatever because she's from the New York area, so I don't know if they were trying to make a joke out of it, saying, you know, she only makes 10 grand, that's why she's a waitress. Or does she actually make a lot of money at the cash games and you just don't know it because Hendon Mob doesn't record that because that's
right,
impossible. So
yeah.
So I don't know how good of a poker player she is. They haven't, obviously, they don't do stuff like that on this show. They never do any kind of background stuff. All they do is put their little title on the screen.
There's never a poker challenge either.
Yeah, no. So I don't know. My first impressions were that she seemed pretty smart. She seemed like she's going to be around a little bit because generally the people they let talk on the show are the ones that they're wanting you to see for a long period of time because they're going to be around for a while, so they're making them like a star.
Right.
So she might be around for a while. It's hard to say. It's the minute she was on, I said, gee, look at that, another poker player. They're always putting poker players on, and they always lose. And except for, you know, when they get to Big Brother or whatever, but this is different.
Vanessa lost there too.
Yeah, Vanessa lost there too, but she got far at least. The poker players usually last like week three or four, and then they're out. You know, I don't know. I always think poker players would do all right if they don't tell people they're poker players. You know, once they tell them they're a poker player, then they think they're making big money. Then they say, oh, you know what? He's already making good money. Let's get him out. Or this guy's got to be tricky because he's a poker player. Let's get him out. Or
right.
And Scott Pollard immediately tells everybody he's in the NBA, or was in the NBA.
Well, for somebody like that, I think you have to, right?
I don't know.
Figure it out eventually. I mean, it's always amazing to me that somebody figures it out.
Here's the deal.
Much TV is that I watch, and celebrities and stuff like that. There's only like a handful of celebrities who could walk past me on the street, and I'd be like, oh my God! Because I don't associate people in places that I don't expect them to be. You know?
Yeah.
So if I'm on Survivor, I'm going to look at somebody and I'm like, how am I going to remember John Rocker from 20 years ago? But everybody does. Somebody finds out.
Yeah, but Rocker was a
quarterback that, you know, wasn't even really a quarterback.
I mean, Pollard was like a mid-level pro who quit 8 years ago when the Celtics won the title.
Right. Remember, a basketball player. I mean, a fan. You obviously know him.
It just seemed odd to me. He volunteered it right away, you know. If what he does for a living now is not NBA, I would have taken that as far as I could go. I mean, the minute you say that, they're like, this guy's a millionaire. He doesn't need to play. He's got an NBA ring from playing with the Celtics.
But I don't think everybody judges on that. I
mean, it's not a judge. They just, that's the thing they use to get rid of him in the end. They always do.
Yeah. Maybe. It's possible to win in being rich, too.
He's not going
to
win.
No, I'm just saying. I think it's funny, these people that try to hide something in the back. Some of them are hilarious about trying to hide it. But, you know, when you're a celebrity like that, I think it's just a waste of time. You know, eventually they're going to come out. And then people don't trust you because they think you know. I mean, what did that quarterback say he was? Like some kind of, like, landscapist or something like that?
Yeah, the Chiefs quarterback or something.
Yeah, whatever his name was. But, then they figure out later on. Then they have a reason to distrust you. I mean, I would rather start off at the beginning having them think that I'm a millionaire than 10 days into this game, find out that I was a liar, you know?
And just keep denying it, dude. They're not going to get the internet to prove it. Just keep denying
true. It. I guess there is no way.
I mean, this guy's got a ton of tattoos.
Then you sound clueless, so.
Yeah, but this guy had a ton of tattoos, and I'm not sure if one of them says, like, an NBA team on it or something, because then he has to tell the truth because he's got his shirt off all the time. But if I had no indication that I'm like, dude, you know what? I know I am not at all coordinated. I am not an NBA player. I may look like somebody, but dude, I'm just a big gardener, you know, or something. I don't know. But, I mean, I would stick with that for the whole way because there's no way they can prove it. They can't, they're not going to have their cell phones with them on the island. So when it gets off and it showed you lied, big deal. They have to vote without that information. So there's no way it's like a poker player. You don't just say, oh, yeah, I have a straight flush. No, you don't tell them the truth until you get what you want.
Oh my gosh! I'd
right?
love to see you on this game.
I would love to be on this game, except that I could never possibly sleep or live with people. So
yeah. That's why I like to watch you on it.
I would be off the first day.
I'm out. Jump.
I'd be out the first day.
Send the boat.
And
going home.
I'd be gone. I wouldn't get any sleep either. I can't sleep like on a nice bed in my comfortable home. I couldn't sleep there. I'd be miserable. They'd throw me off.
Well, I'll be rooting for Anna for no other reason than she's on my fantasy team, as well as the blackjack card counter too. So.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to be rooting for that until I actually watch and decide I don't like her.
So. Well, yeah, we'll start watching it because we're going to be talking about this probably a lot since we do that all the time whenever someone's on Survivor. We talk about it on the show. So.
Somebody who clearly is a celebrity, Phil Hellmuth. He was up in Ann Arbor, the city that I don't normally mention except when I have to on the show. To support Jim Harbaugh and his recruiting class for the University of Michigan football team, I guess they call him. when a player invited him via Twitter to visit the charity poker room they were playing in, and wouldn't you know it, Helmuth showed up, played for a while, and walked out with a reported $400 profit.
Oh, man. That's hilarious. And that reminds me, too, of that FanDuel story. They brought up Hellmuth in there. They're talking about skill versus luck. And I mean, you got to read the story, but it was pretty funny that, you know, thinking about Hellmuth, if there's no skill involved, he'd win them all or whatever. So,
yeah.
I like that. I like the idea that he shows up and plays like that. That's really, I mean, I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, we talked about him a lot on the show, I know I've been clear, I think you probably have too, that I just don't like his persona
right. That
he's created. But as a human being, when I've interacted with him at charity events, he has been really genuine. So, and it's obviously, I think, it's kind of cool that, you know, hey, I'll just show him play a little charity poker and you know, pose for pictures and stuff. And that, you know, that's not the poker brat there. That's the real Phil, I think.
Yeah, so, I think so too.
It's pretty cool.
I always kick myself when I hear his name because I always say, why didn't I get into that cab with him?
That's right. Yeah.
Caesar's Palace. I'm walking with the guy. He's like, looking at me like, you're going to get in with me? And I'm like, all right, thanks a lot. No, get into the cab with a, at the time, 11-time winner or 12-time winner or whatever, and share a cab.
I kind of thought about that the other day. I was talking to one of my friends that still works at the Times, and the political reporter actually got an interview with Donald Trump when he was down here campaigning, but ran out of time. So he asked him to get in the SUV with him on the way to the airport, and he did the interview in the SUV, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But then he gets to the airport, Trump gets out, gets on his plane, and the reporter has to call Uber to get home.
Oh, to get home. I know it. That's hilarious.
He's going to turn around and take it back.
And the thing was, too, is like everywhere in Vegas I can walk. So I know he was going to like another casino. I should have just got in the damn car with him. I can't believe I didn't do it. I think it was because we had to report for that academy or something when we were out there. But I should have done it anyway. I should have said, no, Scott, I'm sorry. This is way more important. But, that's all right. I still have this story to tell, so how stupid I was. Get a little mileage out of that. Hey, any updates? Mohegan Sun in Connecticut will host an Antioch Poker Tour Championship event April 2nd to the 10th. The eight-event series ends with the $1,100 buy-in main event, and the winner of which will appear on the cover of Antioch Magazine. For more details and a complete schedule and discount room rates, visit antiochmagazine.com/Mohegan Sun and stay tuned for more announcements on 2016 Antioch Poker Tour locations. And Scott, who puts the file together, he's making a plea here. Listeners have flooded us with hands of the week, which is awesome. But no one calls the hotline. Listener spotlight, we need some stuff for that. We need some hotline calls. And call the floor, too. Call the floor, which is usually a bountiful of submissions.
Elliot loves doing these call the floors.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, he hasn't heard from us in a while. He's like, hey, you got any more for me? And I'm like, hey, I send them when I get them.
So. Yep. So email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline, 206-424-6145. And you can even post in the Antiup group discussions on PokerRadius.com because we love when you guys send us stuff. It's what you want to hear about, what you want to find out about, what our thoughts are on. So. And, of course, the listener spotlight, like we said, you know, if you call us or email us, then you have won something from us. We'll give you something really cool, just like we do with Call the Four and Hand of the Week. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. It comes from Justin. It says, I think poker is missing the big-name personalities or superstars like we had in the past. For instance, I play in a very casual recreational home game where one of the players gave us all nicknames. His name is Justin Chan. He said he's the only Asian guy. Other guys, Corden Ivy. He's the only black guy. Daddy Brunson. Mahmoud Moneymaker. Bian Esfandiari. Javad? What do you think of that? Javad? Javad Lederer, and Sam Farha. Sam Farha's in your home game?
Wow, yeah.
That's awesome. How casual can that be? Especially even dressed. He doesn't even dress casually. These guys relate more to the poker personalities that we saw on TV during the poker boom. They don't know about the online poker wizards or the young pros that crush super high rollers now. I think poker would be better off if we could create more personalities that people can relate to. I know players don't sign up for an ambassador role, but recreational players strive to be like the pros and players they look up to. So we need more of that, he says.
I can't disagree.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's related to this is that a lot of poker is not on TV. You know, you've got the straightforward World Poker Tour, and some people can see the Heartland Tour, stuff like that, but... You know, when the World Series comes around, okay, you're seeing the World Series. But until we get a bunch of money infused into this again and you start to see those settings where these people can be highlighted, where you can invite back a Doyle Brunson, you can invite a Todd Brunson, you know, because those guys aren't, with the massive fields, those guys aren't guaranteed to get TV time anymore. So until we get that money infused into the company, or into the industry, you know, it's going to be, you know, I think if that ever happens again, we're going to have that stuff again. We're not missing the big name personalities anymore. I think they're there. They're just not having these opportunities.
We'll watch this Global Poker League and see how that develops.
Yeah.
That's probably going to be our next best hope at developing poker personalities people actually care about. Because the guy's right. You know, the young pros, it's a different game now. And these young online pros just don't have the personality the old school guys did, you know, back when boom started. So
yeah,
you know, we'll see whether, you know, I don't know who's going to get drafted. I think they're doing the draft here in a week or so. I think they had like 213 possible draftees.
I'm one of them.
It's drafted.
They don't know it yet, but I'm one of them.
Yeah good luck on that draft day. You're not going to be the one invited to New York to sit there under your suit. You're going to be the guy at home waiting for the phone to ring. It never will.
I'll wear the logo that you don't like and root for him from my home.
But yeah, so that might be a possibility if it takes off. But other than that, I think it's gonna be really tough right now. It's, you know, it's really tough to have that kind of exposure without regular TV coverage.
Yeah, and like I said, I like the intimate setting where you get to know these people and watch how they play and see their interaction with the other guys. If that's what created the personalities and the people that you want to be like or be around or something and
right. Whatever.
But we'll see. Someday it may happen again. Who knows? FanDuel might actually be proven wrong and might get some actual skill-based games on TV again. All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how we would have ruled. You know, that is a lot to say. It's hard for me to say that every week.
Well, it's hard for you to say anything.
That's a lot to say.
Not really the bar that we're going to set there.
I think everybody knows who Elliot is now. We just say, hey, Elliot will help you out. We should call it Ask Elliot now instead of Call the Floor. This comes from Nick in South Florida. He says, we're in a 2-5 no-limit hold'em game in a South Florida card room. Seat one shoves on the river and is called by one player. And while the third and final player in the hand is still contemplating, seat one yells, where are my cards? Apparently the dealer had mucked them by accident. The floor is called, and the craziest ruling I have ever seen is made. The floor pulls seat one away from the table and asks him what his hand was. The floor proceeds to look through the muck and pulls out two cards and says the hand is live. The two cards are not on top, bottom, or even together in the muck. The third player makes the call. Seat one wins the pot, and I am sitting there confused and in shock. I thought that one of the main rules in the poker room is that if the player's cards touch the muck, the hand is dead, and it is the player's responsibility to protect their cards. Am I wrong in thinking that seat one's hand should have been declared dead, and his stack should have been up for grabs between the other two players? I also want to add that by judging the players, dealer, and floor reactions, I do believe that everybody involved was honest in this situation, and there was no cheating. But there is no definitive way to prove that, so if I was involved in the hand, I would have raised hell and requested to get another floor or manager to check the rule book on this call.
All right, Elliot says, player one's cards, as you describe them in this situation, are irretrievable, especially since they were not tabled face up. Cards that are easily identifiable and retrievable, such as being adjacent or even slightly touching the muck or another player's hand, may be returned to the player by the floor person. It's fairly common for the player to have to be able to name the specific cards in this type of situation. The player does not completely name the cards deemed retrievable in the first and only attempt to name them, then the floor person is supposed to send those cards to the muck without delay. Specifying and naming the cards is never to be used to grab unidentifiable and irretrievable cards from the muck. As for player one's last bet, it should be returned due to the dealer error. This would cause the other player's bets to be turned as well. The remainder of the pot would be won by either of the other two players with no more betting and no replacement for the river.
Yeah. This reminds me of that a few years ago, No Limit Hold'em, the World Series, I think it was the main event, when the woman had pocket aces and they got mucked.
Oh, yes.
And she steps back and tells the guy what they were, and they were actually looking for him or something. I can't remember what they did there, but that was really controversial, too. I remember that was because it was a tournament, and they had that rule about any person eliminated, their hand must be shown.
Right, so they're doing
everything they can to show her cards or something like that. I think I'm remembering that correctly. But, yeah, in a cash game especially, you don't go looking for the cards. And then let the guy – and the guy wins the tournament – or wins the hand, I mean, the pot. That's crazy.
Yeah, this was really weird. Wow.
I don't even know what to say about it.
It's interesting, though, because I have talked to – we've had – three or four people do our Call the Floor segment over the years.
Right.
And I know at least one of them is not a fan of what he calls the whisper rule, which would be the scenario here where,
right. You
know, player whispers, you know, I had, you know, Jack of Diamonds, Queen of Clubs, and then they go find it. So there are some floor people that don't even entertain that thought. So be prepared for that.
Yeah.
I think the bottom line of what Ellie's trying to get at is if you can make the hand right, then you should. That's always the thing that I think you got to keep in mind in all these call the floors. Can we do the right thing here? If we can, then let's do it. If we can't, then that's when we have to make a decision. So here, you know, if we can make it right, let's do it. But as Nick said, I mean, the cards just jumbled in the muck. So now you're opening up to the fact that the guy, you know, if I'm going to whisper a card, I mean, what's stopping me from saying, ace of hearts? Yeah. Use the diamonds. I just hope that they happen to be in the muck.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And what's the worst thing if they can't find them? They're like, what? And then now you can say, well, that's what I had. I don't know where they went. So, yeah, I think at that point I'm with Nick. I would feel really kind of violated here that, you know, somebody could just say you need two cards and the floor person starts digging in the muck like it's the big jumbo thing of balls like Chuck E. Cheese trying to find them, right?
Yeah.
And so, but I also say... you know, I think this is one of the things that people have a problem with is this fallacy that once the cards touch the mock, they are dead beyond belief.
Right.
It's not true. So if we can retrieve the cards, and it's easy to retrieve them, and make things right, then I think most floor people are going to do that. So, you know, get past that, but I think it's right, though, once it gets buried in there and under 4 days of garbage, it's a lot harder to make it right.
Yeah, and you feel for the player because maybe he did protect his cards, but the dealer just didn't realize it or whatever. But then again, yeah, you're all in. When you're all in and the dealer knows you're all in, he sees you put your chips forward, you don't think he's going to take your cards because it's clear you're all in.
Right.
You know, there's some moments where, yeah, okay, you may have had a moment of, you know, brain fart or something, but so what? I mean, come on. The dealer's there for a reason. He knows you're all in. He put your chips all in. He declared you all in. A lot of them, that's why they take the chip and throw it to the all-in guy when a lot of those places do that.
Right, yeah.
So it's obvious that you're not going to take his cards. So that's why you got to feel sorry for this guy a little bit. Again, in the end, it's, you know, he's responsible.
It's a human game, though, so yeah. Things are going to happen.
Yeah, things are going to happen. So not blaming anybody, just feel bad for everyone involved, especially the guys who lost the pot. You know what I mean? They lost the pot, and, you know, this guy... There's no way his card should have been retrieved that way. So everybody, I think, got screwed there, except for the guy who won. Hey, guess what? We get complete O'Malley's move today. We're going to refresh our memories here. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing your good old garden variety $1, $2, no limit hold'em casino cash game. This is a casino we regular and know a few of the players at the table. We bought in for $200 and have doubled it to $400. We are under the gun and look down at the ace of clubs, king of clubs. Standard raise for this table is $12, but since we are under the gun, we want to thin the field and build a pot for a potential flop. We make it $15 to go. It's folded to the cutoff who makes the call. Everyone else folds. With $30 in the pot, the flop is the ace of spades, jack of clubs, deuce of diamonds. We are first to act and make a $20 bet into the pot, trying to make this seem like a standard continuation bet. The cutoff calls quickly. The cutoff is a player we have tangled with in the past. Sometimes he's gotten the better of us, sometimes we've gotten the better of him. He can be tricky, but usually plays pretty straightforward ABC poker in cash game settings, although he has been known to step out of line pre-flop, especially when things aren't going well. He's already blown through one buy-in tonight, but has worked his second buy-in up to $300 from $200. The pot is $70, and the turn is the king of hearts. Beautiful. If he had stepped out of line with ace-jack, we've caught up. We again lead for $50, which our opponent again quickly calls. There's $170 in the pot, and the river is the tray of clubs. Even though we've got top two on a relatively dry board, something isn't sitting right with me on this one. Our opponent just seems too confident here. We're going to check to control the size of the pot and see what he does. Our opponent thinks for quite a while before betting $75 into the pot. What's the move?
This was an easy call for me. Being out of position, didn't give us much information, but our line, pre-flop raise, see bet the flop, continue on the turn and check the river, is one that can easily be misinterpreted by our opponent as weakness. While he could have been walking the dog with a set all along, he just as easily could have had a smaller two pair. I think he's prices in with his river bet, and if he has better hand, good hand.
This pains me, but it's an easy call for me too for the same reasons. It kills me to say that.
It's no fun when we agree.
No, it just kills me. But, I mean, really, the amount of size of this pot, what we have for a hand, and exactly what you said, that it clearly looks like we're weak and just hoping that and a guy bets a decent amount, but it's not too much for us to fold. I have to call that. So here we go. Here's part two.
Hello again. We have put $85 into the pot and now have to call $75 to win $245. I like those odds, I like our hand, but I don't like the confidence our opponent is showing. Could it be Queen 10? I don't think he'd call our bet on the flop with a gut shot. Maybe he flopped a set of jacks. I just can't lay this down here, but I'm not going to raise. We make the call. Ace-King is no good, our opponent says, flipping over, deuces. Ugh, a set of twos? The hand you never really consider. What makes this one worse is our opponent had us pegged the whole time and bet an amount he knew we might call. We muck our hand face down and scowl. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes you run up against an opponent reading and playing better than you. In these cases, you just have to limit your losses. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, sometimes you're walking the dog and sometimes you're the dog, Chris. I'm going to lick my wounds here, but I'm going to be back barking the very next day, and I'm not going to let this bother me at all.
Well, if I'm the dog, I'm going to lick something else because I can. But yeah, I wasn't confident we had the best of it, but I had to call. So I was just like you. There's just I just couldn't let that one go. It was too big of a hint. So what are you going to do? Top two, lose to a set.
Yeah, I'd be curious how many really good players would have gotten away from that. I just don't see it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I know we're there's a 50-50 kind of divide here, but this one just seems too easy.
Yeah. Hey, the sets are always the ones that baffle everybody.
And that's why I say it's a great, right? Because yeah. It's very easy to disguise them. Because, you know, no matter what you're looking at that there, you always got to think in the back of your head, like, well, I could have a set. And if you always let yourself believe that, then you're going to be folding every time.
Every time, yeah.
So, you know, that's why it's so effective when you have them and so devastating when you're up against it. So.
Absolutely. Well put.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AntieUpMagazine.com. And as we remember, this is week two of our double shot. Good friend O'Malley sent us a couple hands in, and we dissected one last week, and this will be our double of the double shot.
What always hurts me with these is that I can't remember if the last week's hand is going to have any, you know, weight on this one, or right. If it's all new, or... So I'm always worried that, you know, I'm going to forget the lesson learned from last week and not apply it to this week.
See, I'm blissfully ignorant. Every time I go to bed at night, the pillow just sucks everything out of my head and I start fresh the next day.
So okay.
I don't even have to worry about whether I'm going to miss that. All right, so this time it's a single table, nine-handed sit and go. So I know that wasn't the...
All right, that's good. That's good.
Buy-in was $25. He says it's kind of a weird home game. Only the top two positions get paid. First gets $150, second gets $75. We are down to five-handed. Chip leader has a huge stack. Starting stacks were 5,000, but the average stack now is 9,000. Chip leader is 25,000, which is over half the chips in play, which O'Malley says, which means if you take out his stack, the four remaining players average 5,000 less than 10 big blinds because we're at the 300, 600 level for the 100 ante. And we are under the gun with 7,500. And so O'Malley says, my am is what? 7? Something very low? I have two black trays and one stack smaller than me directly to my left.
Oh, man. I don't even know if I play this hand. I may fold it. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the temperature of this room. You know what I mean? I could be, if these guys are all timid... And, you know, I could be representing a huge hand with it and then go with that. There's a lot of ways to play this. Folding is not a bad option either.
Right.
Generally, when I'm under the gun, no, I'm raising no matter what. Because if I'm limping, it's pretty suspicious that it's either aces or small pair or suited ace or something. And they're going to be able to narrow down my hand range pretty well after the flop. So... I generally just like to raise. So if I'm going to play the hand, I'd probably make it $2,000. Although, how much do I have? Like five?
7,500. So.
7,500. So,
what makes it so difficult, right?
Yeah, I think I'm just going to fold this hand, to be honest with you, and cover my butt that way. Anything happens after this, I'm like, hey, I folded. You know?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting situation here because if we normally raise 2.5x or whatever, and maybe we raise a little bit more because there's antes now, so that's, what, 12... 1,500, maybe a little bit more. It's a pretty significant part of our stack, and if we get bet off of it, then we don't get anything out of it. I mean, our chips are really valuable now, I think. More so.
Yeah, your M is like four here. And I mean, it's a sit and go, but I mean, you really have four rounds. That's it.
Yeah, so I guess what I'm saying is I don't think you could do your normal raise here, so I think you have two options. Either you limp, which is acceptable. You know, normally the rule is, you know, if you're putting less than 10% of your stack in, then that's fine. And so we'd be putting 600 in. We have 7,500, so we could limp and just hope we hit our set. And the limp doesn't really hurt our stack too much. Or I think we have to shove. And if we shove, I don't want to get called.
Yeah. You just want to get another round for free.
So, yeah. So, I mean, and you know, when you get this low in a tournament, when you're shoving, you're hoping to pick up the pot right there, right?
Yeah.
And which is pretty nice because it's like, what, 1,400 are in there, so it's going to help us out. But it's so hard under the gun to fade everybody else at the table. And we do have the chip leader still here, 25,000. I mean, if he has almost any decent hand, he's going to call, right?
Right.
So I think it's pretty likely that we're going to get called by somebody here. And a pair of threes is not what I want to have when I get called. Well, it's my tournament life on the line, so... So yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for a fold. And I actually don't really mind the limp, even if I have normally raised. I know our standard thing is to, you know, be consistent in what we do. But I think sit and go is we change a little bit. I think you can mix things up every once in a while. I mean, I wouldn't want to limp always with just a slow pocket pair. I mean, I might want to, if I'm playing with people regularly, I might want to limp with aces there and hope that I get somebody to raise behind and stuff. Keep people honest with it. But I could defend either one of those two. I don't think a normal raise is correct.
Yeah, normal raise is bizarre because that's just crippling you, and what are you going to do after the flop? You know, especially if you took control of it, you know. And if the chip leader gets involved, you know, now you're just playing with fire, you know. Yeah, I think I agree. I would either fold or maybe I wouldn't limp. I know it could definitely, you know, telegraph what we have in a way, but I guess there's three scenarios that limps usually happen under that gun, so maybe you can get away with it, and if you hit your set, you know, you'd be really, really fortunate.
It also depends with how the table's going too.
Right.
If it's a very active table, then I definitely can be careful here. If it's a little passive table, then, you know, my limp, I might actually get to see that flop nicely.
Yeah, there's so many ifs here that we don't have answers to, so generally I'm folding or shoving with this hand, with this stack. If my stack's a little bigger, I'm raising, you know, to whatever I need to raise to, 2,000 or something. But with the stack we have, it's like, it seems like it's fold or shove, to be honest. It's just weird, but it does seem like that. I don't like threes. I just hate them. I mean, yeah, they can be well disguised, like the move we just completed by him with the deuces that made a set, but this situation is just scary for me.
Yeah. All right. So he says, I don't want to shove. I'd rather make a standard raise, hopefully pick up the blinds. But if I get any resistance, I'll be able to fold. So I make it 1,500 to go. Ouch.
Well, the other thing, too, is that I was always under the impression that when their antes are already kicked in, you're betting more than 3x under the gun. You know?
Right, because you have to count for that.
Yeah. You got to count for that. So if you're already, it's 3-6, that's 9. You got nine. Are all 9 players still alive?
No, we're five-handed.
Oh, five-handed. Okay, so you said 14 was in there, right? So, yeah, I don't know, 18, I mean, I don't know. I guess he's betting pot, which is a decent amount, but I don't know. I feel like that's not enough
regardless
money.
Of what he raises there, if it's not a shove, I mean, I guess my problem is that if I get in resistance, I'll be able to fold. I don't think I can. I mean, I can. Don't get me wrong, but why do I want to risk 1,500 if I'm going to wilt very quickly?
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather wait for a chance when I feel more confident about my hand. You know, a hand where I'm not going to feel like I can get pushed around, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is five-handed, so when we're saying under the gun, it's a little misleading when you're thinking about you said it was a nine-handed sit and go. I forget we're down to five-handed.
Right?
So, yeah, it's like, so maybe, I don't know. Maybe it'll be more effective raising now, you know, and maybe you could. But, yeah, I know what you're saying, too.
Yeah, at this point in the tournament, I don't want to play any hand that I don't feel confident that I can play to the end.
Right.
Or at least for a raise. You know, like I said, I might entertain a limp here just to see if I can get lucky, but that's a different story. But if I'm betting 1,500 and saying, you know, hey, if somebody raises me, I'm done, that's valuable chips there. I just gave away for no reason.
Yeah.
I'll wait for another hand when I feel a little more confident with it.
Yeah, I'm a little more inclined to play differently five-handed with this than I would have been if it was a full sit and go, so...
Sure, yeah.
And how many spots? It only pays two, so you're only three out of the money. So, yeah.
We still got some time to go here where you get a chip up, and, you know, one guy's going to be sitting on those chips, I would think, so.
Yeah, I think I might be, I don't know. I can go either way still, even though it's five-handed.
Well, the other thing, too, is he says if you take the four remaining players, average 5,000 and less than 10 big blinds. So everybody's really in shove mode here, right?
Yeah.
So I got to be worried about that when I bet or shove here, that I'm going to get called by somebody that says, hey, this is my hand, I got to go with it. If not, if I get out of this hand, there's going to be people shoving all, you know, every hand somebody's going to be shoving probably at some point.
Right.
So, you know, I'm going to be in the blinds next, right? So we'll take a chance there, I think, rather. But I don't want to put 1,500 in here if in my mind I've already told myself that I'm going to fold if anybody pushes back.
The other thing, too, is he said if you remove the chip leader, the other four players, their average stack is about 5,000. Is that what he said?
That's what he said.
So if we have 75, that means there's somebody out there with like 25. So that clearly is going to be a shove coming.
Exactly.
Or even, you know what I mean? So you really want to be careful what hands you're playing, because you're not going to want to fold for, if you bet 1,500 and he bet shoves are 25, now you don't have to just call 1,000. But now you just bet a 30-year stack on a pocket pair of threes. You know, ugh. So,
yeah, I would much rather make this raise on the button with 7-deuce offsuit than I would. Really.
I know what you're saying. I know.
You got a better chance of picking up the blinds. Like, that's what you're doing here.
Right.
It's just, you know, wow, we're getting involved in something that I wouldn't want to get involved in at a price that I definitely don't want to get involved with.
Yeah. That's what happens.
All right. So we make a 1,500 to go. Stacked my left shoves for his remaining 4,500.
Mm-hmm.
Button folds, the small blind shoves for his remaining 8,500, and the big blind, who is a massive chip leader, shrugs and calls.
Wow. So the average stacks can't be 5,000. They got to be more than that. If you got an 8,000, a 4,000, and a 7,000, they can't be averaging 5, unless the guy had zero chips, really, practically.
Yeah.
All right, so they got more money than that. But, wow. Wow. Well, he said he could fold, so at what point does he... he said he could fold.
To me.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, there's a lot of money in there now.
Yeah. And you'll still survive if the 8,000 doesn't beat you.
Yeah, so I guess those are the considerations here, is that you know, you could fold and just let the chip leader hopefully win and knock three players out, two players out.
At least two.
Two. And that gets you to the bubble, right?
Right. And you still have 6,000, about.
Right, exactly. So that's probably the right play, I think. But now, there's so much money in that pot that if we hit and get lucky, now we're the chip leader.
Okay, let me stop you right there. If the odds of us probably having to hit, we're going to probably have to hit to win this.
That's probably right.
Because you're going up at least against six cards now. Pocket threes against six cards on a flop, turn, and river,
probably
guaranteed to come.
Out there, and it's
so you'd have to be getting like 8-1 on your money to make this a right call, because that's what it takes to flop a set.
I mean, obviously it's sit and go, so the strategy changes a little bit.
Right, but I mean, as far as a set, to hit, you have to hit a set here, or some weird straight.
It could still be a straight or flush, possibly.
But a four card, so now you're really pushing it for... You're right, so if you have to get 6-1 or 5-1 on your money, you're not getting that.
I'm not advocating I'm going to call. I'm just saying it's a different scenario than what we talked about when we made the 1,500 and got any kind of resistance. I think what he was talking about there is, you know, if just a one player show, you know, the 4,500 show, then it's a different story. But now we got all these people involved, a lot of money in there. Somebody's going to win that pot. And if we fold, we got to hope it's going to be the chip leader, so we get closer to the money. But then the chip leader, geez.
So this is more of a situation, right? Because it's... The 8,000 guy shoved, right?
Yeah.
So this is a situation, sort of, because he's either going to call here or fold, and that's it.
Right.
So it's over after this. So I'm gonna fold.
It's probably the safest move, right?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like even if we're wrong, we still have 6,000, which, you know, it still can do a bit of damage to these other stacks, regardless of who wins his hand, and then you pick a better hand to shove with. You know, I don't know. You got a couple of hands before you're in the blinds again, so I think I would fold.
The other thing too, I'm just going to say, this is always happens when the master chip leader shrugs and calls.
Yeah,
always wins.
Always wins. Yeah, that's you got some empirical evidence to back that one up.
Like six tray or something. And
let's see
four card straight or something.
Let's see the stats on that. When players shrug, they win 87% of the time.
All right, so it's back to O'Malley. He says, I have to call 6,000 to win a squiggly 28,000 unit pop. making me the new chip leader. However, if I fold and the chip leader wins, I only have to wait out one more player to make it into the money, but I would be the short stack. He says, I ultimately decide to call.
It's a close decision if it's 28,000, because that's about 4-1. You probably are looking at, like, you need 5 or 6-1 to really make it proper, something like that. So it's pretty close. And, if you know, $25 sit and go, you try and take a chance, because then if he wins, now he can win the whole thing, which is what you play for anyway, is a win. So it's a close decision.
In the other scenarios, we're playing to cash. I mean, if you make this call, now you're playing to win.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the right move, but yeah, at least that's what you're doing.
Right? It's a close decision.
All right, so he decides to call. Short stack turns over king of hearts, queen of hearts. Small blind has 10 of spades, 10 of diamonds. And the big blind ship leader has ace of diamonds, 7 of diamonds.
We're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, because, you know, no one's getting in their cards counterfeited.
Right.
And we already have a pair that we had to beat.
Yep.
Although, there's no black cards. Well, one spade. There, so...
Oof.
Our straight and flush possibilities are still alive, for the most part.
Yeah.
Well, one of them is.
Well, the wheel and the seven... Yeah. Or yeah. Two straights, but still. All right, well, this is not good for us.
No.
But there's that glimmer of hope.
So you're saying that there's a chance.
You're saying there's a chance.
All right, flop comes down. King of diamonds, jack of hearts, seven of hearts. Turns the jack of diamonds. And the river is the ace of clubs.
Yeah. Yeah, we were in a lot of trouble.
So he goes on to say the rich get richer, obviously, because the chip leader won and knocked everybody out. There was some discussion, he said, since we're all friends in this game, that my hand was the only one that had no business being in the pot. And O'Malley says, I beg to differ. I think while the odds of me coming out with the best of it were low, there were other factors to take into account that did make it worth it. One, I would be the chip leader. Two, would be down one player and have another crippled. But being the chip leader would be the most important factor. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I think we touched on this a little bit. I feel like sometimes you have to take a chance, you know, and that was a close decision, and it would have given him a really big chip lead at that point, because he would have knocked 75 off the chip leader who had, what, 25, so he'd be down to, you know, 17,000 or so, and then you'd be up to 28 more, even more probably, so
yeah.
35 or so. So, yeah, every once in a while I do the same thing. I think I'm going to go bigger or home. I think that a lot when I play poker, when I'm playing tournaments. And so that was his opportunity to go bigger or go home, you know. But had the rich gotten richer and he folded, and of course, I'm not doing this whole results-oriented crap, right. but still, if you knew it wasn't that good of a decision and you folded, the chip leader has a massive chip lead and you're alive with one guy left and you still have $6,000 and the other guy left probably has, you know, 3 or 4.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm glad I folded, to be honest. But never know. That's how you learn.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he had no business being in the pot. I would say he had little business.
Yeah, little business.
There's a case to be made. But I think everybody else was probably right. King of hearts, queen of hearts. That's good. Particularly because it's odd that we just did a standard raise instead of shoved, right?
So right.
I think he had us pegged right that we would fold to some kind of resistance. So now that 1,400 in there that we were trying to pick up already is now 2,900.
Yeah.
That's 50% to our stack, so I can see that. And obviously, tens, you know, it's hard to get a better hand like that with short-handed. Although tens, even though we got one player all-in, another player that's probably going to call all-in, we got the chip leader behind us, that would be a tough decision, wouldn't it?
I don't know. Not five-handed. I mean, you just said people are in shove mode. That could be any two cards when they're in shove mode. It could be any two decent cards. It doesn't have to be a pair, and it could
generally
be any pair below 10.
Cards, I think, so that's kind of the problem, I think. I mean, exactly the short stack hand is exactly what I would expect to be turned over when I have those 10s.
Yeah.
And it's a coin flip, right?
So, yeah.
I got the chip leader behind me. That's the other thing that I would think about at that point.
I don't get rid of those
10s. You know, generally in these situations, when we get to them in the sit-and-go or tournament, you know, I think I start looking for ways for other people to knock people out and not necessarily feel like I have to be the one that does it or necessarily feel like I have to chip up. Because again, you know, no matter what if your head's up against the massive chip leader, you still got an opportunity to beat them, right?
You know,
it just takes a couple double ups and back in the game. So I'm not worried so much about that. I'm more worried about, I don't want to say survival, but I'm more worried about if other people are willing to put their tournament life on the line, then I'm happy to get out of the way and let them see how that works out.
Yeah.
So I think I might actually fold those 10s there.
I don't think I fold them. I just, in the heat of it, short stacked, looking at that moment, you're looking for a hand to shove with. You look down at 10s, and you got one guy who just raised. You got another guy who shoved for less. I think I'm letting it go. I mean, I think I'm putting it all in. I don't think I'm...
So you're not worried at all about the big blind chip leader right behind you?
No, not with 10s, because I'm actually hoping to get called there with 10s. The only way I'm going to be... You know what I mean? I'm losing to jacks, queens, kings, and aces. Five-handed, so be it.
Yeah, but you're also possibly losing anyway with a jack, queen, king, or ace in their hand, too.
No, I understand that, but that's also they have to hit the flop. I have a pocket pair made.
Trays, but it's almost essentially the same thing at that point, because the hands that we're going to get called for are going to be overs.
Well, A7 called, and that was under
right,
over. It's only
over.
One over.
Yeah.
You know, one over. I would take 10s against one over card every single day for a flip, every day,
well,
every
for
time.
One over, but we already have another all-in already in, so that's what I'm saying is you could be up against three overs.
Well,
if we came along, you could be up against five overs. So yeah,
the 3-3 was out, so that was clearly a hand that someone thought was deserving of shoving with. King-queen, yeah, okay, it's over. It's a race. So I raised three cards, but I don't know that guy's calling behind me either. You're already know now,
well,
that he called.
You have to make that assumption, I think, or at least consider the fact that, hey, if I'm the chip leader at 25,000 and I've got two players all in and another player that I imagine probably will come along, and I've got the chips to...
A third of your stack. Some guys might just say, I'm full, get out of the way, and take this guy heads on for the title.
Some, you know? But I'm not going to assume that this player is one of those players that would do that. I got to assume that guy's coming along. So now it's quite possible that I could be up against a jack, a queen, a king, and an ace.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I fold those 10s. I don't think I do. But maybe. Maybe I do. I have to be in the moment. I have to be playing with these guys for the whole night and to know what they're like and what that guy might do. Who knows how he built his stack up? You know, could have been some miracle hand, you know, who knows?
Unless you do, right. Yeah.
So I don't know how that guy plays. If I knew he played the way a guy would play that would call, and then maybe I do get out of the way. But if he doesn't, I think I'm in a real good spot here. And of course I wouldn't have been when it was all over, but at the time, that's right. I'm not going to get much of a better hand than that. And if I don't, what was his stack? Do you remember?
No, you're not going to get much of a better hand, but you're going to get a better situation. And
maybe.
I think that's the key when you get down to these things. You're looking for situations, not hands.
But well, you don't have enough time either. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you got plenty of time.
What was the M? What was his stack? Was he the one with the 4,000?
No, 8,500.
Oh, he was at 85. Okay. Well, but he shoved first, right?
Hand, we don't have blinds for the men or three hands.
He shoved second? Or first?
Yes. The king-queen shoved first for 4,500.
Okay. So, to me, I'm thinking that this guy's going with any two cards, and I'm isolating him, and the other guy's going to fold when I put up almost 10 grand. Because at that point, he's calling, if he has 25, 8, that's more than a third of his stack. Does he really want to call a third of his stack?
You have to consider the fact that maybe O'Malley's going to come along, too. So you're not really isolating.
I don't know.
You might be able to ice the chip leader out, but I think that that's dicey. But then I have to worry that O'Malley's going to be in. Now I'm up against two hands. And almost certainly at least the one over, if not two or four.
Yeah, I think I still do it.
Plus, we already have somebody already all in. I got to think either the chip leader or O'Malley's going to call, so there's going to be a bust out here. Gets me one closer.
Five-handed, two blinds behind me. Five-handed, two blinds behind me. I'm shoving my tens. I just am. Five-handed, two blinds behind me. One guy shoving who's desperate to shove with 4,000. I'm shoving and isolating.
Desperate people get good hands too.
Oh, I know, but pocket tens is very rarely beat in that spot, and it wasn't.
I'm just gonna tell you what Danny Negreanu once told me: just tens, Chris.
Hey, O'Malley, thanks for the hand. I'm Chris Cosenza.
Sorry.
I said I'm Chris Cosenza. You got to end the show.
Yeah, I'm getting there. I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.